Hey everyone, you are watching Otaku Movie Anatomy. Remember, there is no spoon. We are adjusting your realities today as we watch the Animatrix. All right, guys, we're going to talk about that. Let's rock.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Otaku Movie Anatomy.
Yay.
Yeah, play that funky music. Yes. It's time for some Animatrix, everyone. Welcome to Otaku Movie Anatomy.
It's so 90s.
Look, it's all four of the original cast.
Oh my gosh,
we're all back together.
No, this is a rare day in Otaku Movie Anatomy because you're right, we are all actually here. And of all the things to bring us together, it is the Animatrix of all things.
The 90s.
Because it's the best.
Yeah, right?
Well, I guess it's 2000.
It changed my life.
1999 came out.
It influenced every part of me.
This changed my life.
We are dating ourselves. So yes, it really is. It's life changing. It's probably one of the best parts of the whole Matrix series in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the Matrix was so awesome that went downhill so fast.
Oh, so quickly.
Oh, man.
Yes, of course, I'm going to be one of your hosts. My name is Jonathan Messa. You can find me at KaibaCat on Twitter, Instagram, all those shenanigans, all those things. Of course, to my left,
I'm Max Song, and you can find me at Max Salt on the everything.
And I'm Yuma Ninja. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Yuma Ninja.
And I'm Michelle. Oh, God.
Who are you? Who are you?
I mess it up like every week. I'm Chubby Bunny Michelle. You can find me everywhere on the internet at I am Chubby Bunny.
It's true. You're right. This is like the one thing.
I don't
every
know.
Week.
It feels like I'm quiet. If I'm not leading, I'm quiet for so long that I kind of forget what I'm supposed to
be.
So she forgets her name.
All right. So we are talking Animatrix. I'm going to give you guys a little information on it before we jump right into everything. Right off the bat, Animatrix was created by the Wachowski brothers. Yeah.
Good for them. Now they are
the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
Now they're not brothers anymore.
They're
technically sisters.
They're the sisters now.
Wait, what?
What?
Both of them.
Do you not know this?
No, they had gender reassignment surgeries.
Pause everything. Fill us in. What?
So Andy and Larry are now...
Both women.
So it's Lana and Andy is now a woman. I can't remember her name.
Both of them recently
out.
The second one, but I believe it was like a couple years ago, like 5 or 6 years ago, where the first brother decided to become a sister, and then I guess now
her name
recently,
is Lana.
I don't remember.
Wow.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then they made Cloud Atlas, and then it all. And there you go.
And then they did Sensei.
Yeah. And there you go.
Lily, I think we have
up
there.
Lily. Okay, Lana and Lily Wachowski.
That's cool.
That's so crazy. Yeah. I had no idea, actually.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well,
it's cool that they get to pick their sibling name, because it kind of matches.
Because they're Lana and Lily. Yeah.
That's kind of neat. Yeah.
So I will try to correct myself. The Wachowski sisters.
Mm-hmm. The Wachowskis.
Yes, the Wachowskis. There you go. They created the Animatrix. Now, they were in Japan promoting the Matrix itself, the first movie, which is the only one you really need to watch.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Yes. And they're big anime fans, which is actually where the Matrix was inspired by, although I heard they did steal the script from someone, but that's a different story.
Oh, shit. Ooh,
yeah,
drama.
That's a different story, and it's rumors.
1999 drama, bitches.
It's Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
And that's just the way the business goes.
Well. Well, they're big anime fans, so they went and visited a bunch of different anime companies that they're big fans of, and they decided, hey, why don't we all get together and make something really cool, Matrix-y anime? Here we are. It's the Animatrix. They wrote the first 4 stories of the Animatrix, which are arguably the best parts of it,
I would have to say.
Yes. And let's see, outside of that, let's see, a little information here. The Final Flight of the Osiris was premiered as part of a movie, sort of like one of those first little movie things, before the movie.
Like the Pixar thing.
Was it for the second movie?
But like real sad.
It was. I have here Dreamcatcher for Dreamcatcher. Something
I don't think I watched that
Dreamcatcher, is it the Stephen King movie?
Is that what it is?
It might be,
That was a weird
movie, too.
So I guess, they were just jumping on board with that, and so that's kind of how they did it. Then the 9-in-1, when they got all 9 stories together, that didn't come out until October 2008. Mm-hmm. However, in 2004, Adult Swim started putting out some of the films. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Toonami in 2006, and that was Toonami Latin America. And it has an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, the Animatrix.
Oh, hi.
That's
great.
Really
it's because
high.
The ones that are strong are super strong.
Yeah, that's right.
And the ones that aren't strong are still
pretty
good.
Yeah. They're not bad.
They're not bad. They're not bad. Yeah. But for sure, like, the strong ones really carry this. Let's see. This is all sort of set between Matrix Reloaded. So it's in between the first movie and the second movie. So Matrix to Matrix Reloaded, that's kind of where the Animatrix fits. Although some of the stories themselves, you know, like, as you get later into, like, the nine stories, they kind of just are their own.
Arbitrary.
Yeah, their own little thing. I even wrote this, and it's very important. This Animatrix, the Animatrix, was set before the movies went to shit. This was the last good thing of the Matrix before it all just crashed and burned.
I thought the twins were pretty cool.
No, they sucked. You're wrong.
Two pale albino dudes with dreads. How is that not cool? Jeez, they didn't have ghost powers.
They were like...
And they had like... They used like straight razors. That is like quintessential anime, and I can't say that that is a crime in any way.
The best things about those last two movies, Monica Bellucci in latex.
Nice.
Wait,
yes.
Monica Bellucci? Right. What's the name of... What's
that? That should have been the first thing.
Yep. Monica Bellucci. That's the name.
Monica Bellucci. She was in... Jesus, what was she in? That gun movie.
She's married to Vincent Cassell.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, sweet. I'll take
that. So I'm the only person here out of the four of us who hasn't seen two or three of The Matrix. I only saw the first one, so I was very confused. Really
save yourself. Don't ever watch them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just felt like I didn't... I think when they came out, I was very like, I'm into anime now, so I'm going to stop watching mainstream everything for like 3 years.
I think, Michelle, I think you won this battle. I think this is a battle you really won because we wasted a few hours of our lives watching the second and third. But specifically, the third one was just god-awful.
No,
it
was very that second
off.
One.
It was very second much like bad, Stockholm Syndrome. But, it's like, we definitely made excuses for the second movie. We're like, oh, the second movie's a little rough, but it's just going to get better in the third movie. And then the third movie came out.
The third movie was like he's Jesus. Yeah. You know what, Neo?
He's Jesus. Like, not even in a subtle way. Like, literally looks like Jesus all the time.
Literally, the second movie for me is the moment it falls because it's literally every single problem that the Wachowskis have in their movies, Cloud Atlas, like, Sense8, it's this overarching, like, we're going to get super, like, heavy-handed and philosophical. And, like, that Kentucky Fried Chicken dude at the end, I was like, you lost me.
Damn. Yeah, that's right.
It was literally Colonel Sanders, the
to be fair, it was
ergo, vis-a-vis. Yes.
Yes.
He was pretty interesting. I feel like the whole thing about Wachowskis is like they make interesting characters. They just don't fill out those characters well. You know, because I looked at Kentucky Fried Chicken dude and I was like, I don't know what it's about. You know, maybe it's because you're in like this pure white room with all
with
these TVs.
He's like wearing a white suit. And he's got like a goatee. Yeah. He's totally skinny Colonel Sanders.
He totally looked like Colonel Sanders.
He didn't really
Sanders.
Have like a southern accent. Nope. So you just kind of just talk like a normal guy and I was like, you need a southern accent, bro.
Yeah.
Like that would have sold it
he
for me.
He was like not Southern Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know exactly right. Yeah.
And like, I'm not making this up. I'm not the first person to say
it. You are the systematic anomaly. Would you like some chicken?
I'm going to have to Google this later.
So the Animatrix is pretty darn cool. It's nine different stories, and I think we could all probably agree as we go forward. The coolest part of the Animatrix, I mean, you got to watch all nine stories.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you get a different styles, different stories, different things through all of it. But the second and third one are called, what's it called? The Second Renaissance, Part 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they are the most interesting, cool cinematic, but anime cinematic stories in the entire Animatrix.
Yes, they are.
And what they do is they tell the story of how we even got to the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really amazing. It's sort of like the basis for what iRobot was and many, many other stories after that. What I really loved about it is saying this word is so hard for me. The Second Renaissance.
Renaissance.
The Renaissance Fair. That we dress up for. It took all these amazing things from our history and then it put it into sort of the same history here, but like robots. So people in the streets and images, you know, of standing in front of the tank, you know, as it's sort of like is
from running like Tiananmen Square.
Thank you very much. Exactly. And they did it all with robots. So they recreated our history with robots sort of as us in a way. With
as us and as the minority. Yeah.
Yes. And we are the oppressors. And I want to take that moment and just that thought process and throw it over to Michelle right now because you've got
doing a lot of like very theater things. Like, and I'm going to throw it over to you. I'm like, catch it. I literally catch it.
Because it truly was. It was incredibly moving, incredibly powerful, the Second Renaissance.
If you get into Renaissance 1 and 2 and you don't feel something is like wrong with yourself,
you're
and
you're dead inside.
You're not being this
Your heart is black.
Yeah.
I mean, the original movies I heard there were, you know, when they cast the actors, the first, like, you know, the months and months before they started filming, they're like, you have to read these, like, three philosophical books mm-hmm. so that you, before we even give you the script, so that you understand it. And they had to, like, go to classes and stuff, and they, oh, wow. you know, and, you know, to help them get there, so they could explain the Matrix properly to other people. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you get to, the Renaissance, now the I can't second, say
yeah, the second Renaissance.
The first one you see, basically it's about how the robot, man created robots. Mm-hmm. The robots gained intelligence, and the robots mm-hmm. decided they didn't want to die, which is where you get the problem. Don't make robots afraid of death. It's very scary. So there's this one robot that goes to trial. So one robot is... There's an owner trying to terminate
this,
him.
This is really interesting. Mm-hmm. It's B-I-66-E-R,
yeah.
which spells bigger, mm-hmm, right? Bigger. Which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, so yeah. Mm-hmm. What happens is this robot, who is named, look like the word bigger in leet speak, I guess. Yes.
This is the age of leet.
Yeah, the early 2000s.
That's made it popular.
So
probably.
He gets sent to trial for killing his master, and in the proceedings, they do this crazy parallel with that trial, as well with the Dred Scott versus Sanford case of 1856, is when an African American was put on trial, and they deduced that you know, the Constitution wasn't talking about African Americans, mm-hmm. Their property, and they're allowed to be destroyed. So in, you know, which is like super upsetting.
But yeah, yeah, it's when you get to this, real dark.
So you show this in here with the robot, and the robot, he loses the case, he gets destroyed, and that's when, you know, the uprising happens. Yeah. Now the reason he's named Bigger. It basically flows back to this novel called Native Son by Richard Wright. And I remember, I forgot that I read this. Mm-hmm. I have this habit of when I read something really upsetting, I kind of block it out. But I read this in school. Thanks, Oakland Catholic High School. Class 2000. We read a lot of literature on slavery and oppression of African Americans in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Catholic school.
Oh, wow.
And so it's referring to the character named Bigger Thomas. And in the novel, it explains that his situation in life is so oppressive that he has to resort to violence. He has to... There's the only way he can, like, get over being oppressed is to just give in to the things that society expects him to do, like mm-hmm. murdering this white woman and then murdering his... raping and murdering his girlfriend. And mm-hmm. it's this crazy... You know, it's not like... It's an analogy of, you know, why this came to be, but why that was a choice he had to make. Mm-hmm. So it's... It's pretty gross. It's pretty gross. But it's really interesting they made those choices. I mean, you said the Wachowski brothers wrote this. They probably wrote this before or as part of writing the first Matrix. Because mm-hmm. They have to make their world, you know,
yeah.
believable.
Yeah, so. The history behind it. Exactly. And I just love that they used, you know, actual histories. I mean, that's something that we could all actually connect with. And I always love that you take us deep. And whenever we do it, I always count on Michelle to take us to this place. Historical and deep.
Yeah.
And there's so many kind of points.
What was it?
I know, yeah.
Kind of a bummer.
Yes.
So what happens when you read about human nature? It's terrible.
Yeah. Who do we have in the chat listening to the deepness right now? Who do we have?
We got Fuster Cluck MD, Ocampo Fam, and then earlier we had was it Drake Vader?
Drake Vader? All right, wow.
What's
thank
up,
you
guys?
What happened to him?
Thank you, guys. Just so you know, we are always monitoring chat. We love to hear you guys and hear your thoughts about everything we're talking about right now about the Animatrix. Right now, we're specifically talking about the second Renaissance, part one and two. Outside of just, I mean, that incredible moment where he stands and then obviously they're going to destroy him as well as every other kind of him, I guess, other...
semi-sentient robot.
Yeah, yes. And so this not even a war starts, genocide starts.
Yeah.
And the surviving robots end up building their own little island, but they're robots, so they're advanced, mm-hmm. they don't have to sleep, they don't have to eat, so they end up working harder and building an infrastructure and a community that's so... Yeah. Efficient and strong that they take over the business of the world,
which is crazy. Like, that's an idea that you just wouldn't necessarily think about. You know, most of these like robot stores, it's like there are robots and they make robots and then the robots attack. Like Overwatch is, you know, a recent example. They basically, that's literally the same story. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but kind of in this Renaissance era where it's the Opniks, which are robots, basically, that are sentient, want to, like, live their own lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the idea of, like, these robots taking over the economy and humans just because they're human nature. Like, technically, if you think about it, we didn't have to necessarily feed into the robot's economy because you know, like that we're giving them more power, but the economy only runs through humans and trade, right?
Yes.
So inevitably, we destroy ourselves by being like, we cannot not buy these things. Like, we cannot buy these conveniences. Because,
like, especially in the Second Renaissance, they just basically show you how much more efficient and, like, just at what length they can go. And, of course, humans, like, we're, like, driven by, you know, actual biometric things. So it's like, oh, okay. But, like, I think, like, the stuff that I noticed about the Second Renaissance is, like, you start with, like, Bigger, who's very humanoid looking. As they start to evolve, they become less and less and less
humanoid. They also lose their humanity, because, much like we did.
Because, I mean, this is something that you see in a lot of movies where, like Terminator is one of those, like, where you see them still looking like a skeleton, like, still looking human. But if you're a computer, why would you need to look like a human? Yeah, you're not in efficient form. Yeah. I think that their research, like, whatever the Wachowskis' failings or, like, greatness, they always are very good at finding those details. Like, why would they need to look human at that point? They don't need to.
You know, the thing is, though, is, like, in the beginning, and this is where I kind of don't know whether or not this is more of a convenient plot choice than it is not. Because, like, they see these machines that are willing to basically, like, kind of make peace with everybody.
Yes.
But instead, because otherwise, if they're like, yeah, it makes sense, they made all these crazy conveniences and we're willing to, like, negotiate and be peaceful because they have no real reason to, like, overthrow humans. That is a human concept of power. And so, to me, in a weird way, I understand that it's supposed to be dramatic, but it doesn't really make sense to me. I don't necessarily think that, you know, if we were in our society now, sure, there's fear-mongering and all that, and sure, Donald Trump is a real thing.
Yeah, right?
You know,
yeah,
that's
actually real.
Yeah, it makes me question whether or not this is the way we would go about it. Would we go for peace, or would we just be so afraid that we were just like, no, you cannot be these things?
I think it's very, like, extreme, because, like, I mean, you're always going to have people who are like, well, why would we, like, in your case, where it's just like, why would we attack these machines who have at their core no malice?
Yeah.
No, they don't want to own the world, because ultimately they need us to survive.
Right.
They need us to buy into their economy or whatever. But, like, I think there is definitely a showcase of people who would do that.
And absolutely. I mean, you look at the Holocaust happened.
Yeah,
you know, mass genocides happened. It happened, you know, in Russia with Stalin and Mussolini.
Yeah.
I just, actually, funny enough, that's so wild. My wife just sent me this this thing. It was in China, and it was like 45 million people were murdered over the span of 38 to 1841, something like that. And it was just like, it's like the greatest mass genocide in the history of our nation, history of the world. And that was their own people.
Yeah.
And so it's not like it's something that's foreign to our world, foreign to our history. So that's something that I felt like was really honest, and I felt like it could happen, especially because we viewed, at least the humans in this, in the Animatrix, viewed them as weaker, as lower, as subservient.
Yeah. As something that we've created so we can destroy.
Like, exactly. Yeah. We made you. And so, you know, but now you didn't respect them becoming their own. I love the fact that the robots ultimately are stronger, smarter, faster, more efficient. But they, like you said, they kept a human form. They show up in, with a top hat and the apple bearing peace. And I do love that. I love, because they say in the Second Renaissance, this will not be the last time that they take the floor.
Yeah.
And the next time, it's demanding and they look,
They look like less
the
human.
Crazy robots, you know, that you see in the Matrix, you know, with the multiple eyes and the tentacles and everything.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's kind of the perfect form. If you really think about it, it's totally practical. And if you've watched the movies, they tear shit up.
Like every inch of, especially the robots in the Matrix, every inch of their body is a weapon at that point. And it's like, that makes sense from a robot, like robotics. Like, why wouldn't you do that? It's very efficient.
It's also, I think, this is one of the most interesting points, too, especially in the lore of the Matrix, is that when you see everything in the real world, it's blackened by this chemical cloud, basically, that blocks out all sunlight. And the crazy thing is, like, they kind of explain it in the Matrix, like, what we did that, we had to try to, like, block out the sun, but then in when you see it in the Animatrix, it's, like, crazy.
Oh,
like,
it's intense.
There's this huge war between when these machines weren't necessarily the efficient killing machines, it was still learning to be an efficient killing machine.
Yeah.
And so through battle, they, like, change into these monstrosities that are just, like, perfect at dismantling humans, basically.
Because ultimately, because humanity fights them, they are, like, ultimately humanity fighting a war with them teaches them how to defeat us.
Yeah.
It makes them make more defenses so they don't get killed.
Yeah.
It's just, like, self-preservation.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, like, at the end, it just kind of doubles back to, like, hey, you guys totally messed us up. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but we didn't want anything. We just wanted to, like, exist and have a purpose. Yeah. And so we're going to create the Matrix for you.
Yeah.
And that, like, to me, just, like, makes the Matrix, the movie, so much deeper.
Yeah.
And so have so much, like, world building and lore and impact to me as, like, a whole like, franchise than it was just the three movies.
Yeah.
Regardless, there's still some semblance of love.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about it, like, crazy. Even Agent Smith says it in that first movie where he's like, this is not our first Matrix. Yeah. The first Matrix we made was a utopia, and you rejected it. So we had to put struggle because that's how you as humanity measures it.
Yeah, that's great.
It was,
great.
Like,
that's
very
true.
Deep. Mm-hmm. I remember watching this movie, but then, and I was like, shit.
Yeah, but then we get to the last episode on the Matrix goes to humans having to make a fake Matrix for the robots.
That they turn that's good. Right,
because the robots have now turned to something that are, you know, killing machines, and they've lost, like, their compassion.
Yeah.
So they're trying to reteach. It's like going full circle.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that's a great Aeon Flux.
Yeah, yeah. I actually wrote that down.
It's funny because, like, in the sense of, like, both Second Renaissance and all of these films, it shows that, like, we as humanity create these people who then learn how to defend themselves because we're the aggressors, who then become the aggressors because, by example, we have led them to this conclusion.
And also, at the end of the day, basically, just human nature fucking human nature.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
Yeah,
we know what we need. We need to build a wall.
We need to alienate all the people we don't like or trust.
Yeah.
Like, that's clearly what we have to do.
Let's just break off in this other country and be our own country. Yeah. Let's not worry about a currency.
Idiots. Yeah.
Jeez, man. I mean, we're kind of covering, I mean, what you're talking about. Who's signing you on?
I think this AI versus humans, like we were talking about, is a consistent trope. I mean, it's in iRobot. It's in, like, even AI. It's in, Terminator, Overwatch. You have all these things, and it's always AI versus human. It's always following this kind of streamline of humans create something and then it gets sentience, and then we have to then decide whether it actually can live and think for itself or do we still own it.
I feel like it's definitely, like, the human fear of, like, having this thing that can think better than us, that are physically stronger than us, that can, you know, process all these things and have ideas that we might not possibly be able to even compute or have. And it's, like, basically the reason that the singularity is such a scary thing for a lot of people, or, like, rampant AI is... That's why it's always, like, a horror trope. You never see that really awesome movie about the friendly AI.
It's true.
When it comes to... Yeah, you're right. It's like, oh, cool. Hey, robots are sentient. Everything's cool. Yeah. And AI, hey, let's go have coffee.
No,
I would love that movie.
Even at its core, though, like, if you really think about it, it's almost like, in, like, robots aside, it's also, like, getting older versus being young. That, like, at the point of it, it's just like, I am older, I am not used to these things, I can't adapt. Yeah. This younger person is, like, faster, stronger, adapts, is creating more than me, I am now obsolete. At the end of it, that's what it is.
And basically, in real life, that's really basically what robots have done to people.
Pretty much. But robots just consistently do it better and forever versus humanity.
They don't age.
That being said, that was
a great correlation.
Whose side are you on?
Whose side are you on? Hey, I want to put this out to the chat also. We're about to ask the question to ourselves when it comes to the robots and the humans here. Whose side are you on? I don't know what you guys are saying right now. I mean,
they're asking questions that are not relevant to the discussion at all.
Oh, okay.
Top five anime movies? Guys, we just watched the series.
We're going to talk about maybe we'll have a second if we have a few minutes to do our top five anime movies of all time. You know what? How about this? You can go back and watch our highest rated films on our channel here. They should have a list of all of our
iTunes.
Past episodes.
Yeah,
So whose side are you on? I mean, this is the question we'll start with.
I don't know.
Michelle.
Like, it's when it's presented in, like, a fictional work like this, it's kind of like you're on both people's sides. Like, the humans are painted in a poor light at the beginning of, like, the Renaissance, but then by the time you get to the Matrix, you're like, I hope the humans win because that sucks, are controlled by robots. Like, you have compassion for who has the most compassion in the film, I think, in the whatever part of the storyline you're watching.
Pretty fair.
Bop.
Wow.
I think...
Cop out.
I think, like, every time I've watched this trope play out, like, I've seen it so many times. Like, it's, like, on Star Trek Next Generation. Uh-huh. Like, every single time, I'm like, robots. Like, we fucked it up. Robots.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck us.
robots.
You know, and there's a part in the Renaissance where they kind of go back and there's like, you know, the robot sympathizers. I'm totally robot sympathizers.
I completely agree.
Also, robots are super fucking cool. Like, yeah. They're just way more interesting than humans to me. So I'm like all for the robots. Yeah. I'm all for the independence. And also it's just like, hey, we created this thing that's basically life now. You know? It's a sentient thinking being, like, then we have to take responsibility for it. Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, all this roots to, like, no one wants to take responsibility.
Yeah, it's like, if you're gonna play God, you have to take the shit that comes with it. Like,
yeah.
There's a dog in the house.
The dog also agrees.
Yes. He's like,
yeah. I was actually gonna bring up the same point. It was the human sympathizers in that part where they're, you know, shooting down the robots and the humans who were there supporting the robots. I actually am right there with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, any sort of oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? Of putting down of any sort of a group
oppression.
Of people. Oppression. Yeah. Oppression of a people I'm not okay with. Like, yeah. I'm about love and acceptance and, you know, and understanding. I feel like we will find, you know, we'll find peace through understanding. Even if I don't agree, like, I will find understanding. I could always say, that's great. I don't see it that way, but dude, I will respect that and like move on with our lives with love and integrity. So
I have a philosophical question. Real quick.
See, I just want to say, I love that we are going so deep today. This is like, that Michelle, you brought this on, and I love it. Well
that's
done.
What the Matrix is.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's meant to make you think.
And I want to know what you guys think out there. Right in. Yes. Whose side are you on, robots or humans? All right, Max, what do you got?
Okay, yeah. So I kind of took this from Deus Ex, the game, that just recently came out, because they actually have this thing called the mechanical apartheid, which is the people that have been spliced with machinery and people that haven't been spliced with machinery, kind of the same situation.
Okay.
But the question is, if you could destroy all the AI, like just all the AI, would you do it? Though, given that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be evil and they are now sentient. So that's the choice that you have to make.
So wait,
do you destroy the AI forever and just not give them a chance, or do you help them out and give them a chance because you don't know what the potential they're going to bring because they are sentient now? So in a weird way, it's like this fine line of like you're killing something but not really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go with Let It Live.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Let It Live. Has anyone seen what was that? Gosh, that movie, the Lorax.
Yeah.
Let It Grow. Let It Grow. The song at the end. Let It Grow. I'm gonna say Let It Grow. Yes, that's what I say. Let it grow. Let it evolve. You know, and see what happens down the road. Granted, look, you may die, and they may be killed by your creation. Maybe a horrible, horrible decision in the end. But hey, man, you gotta try.
Yeah. Plus, I feel like once you've already done something, you can't really be like, oh shit, well, let me just destroy that.
Yeah.
That's not how it works, you know. No. Especially when it's got sentience, it's like at this point that thing has its own like what's more like for, like conscience or resolve.
Yeah, forcing your will upon something like that.
I'm not down with it.
I'm not down with it.
Same.
Who would have guessed we're such a peaceful group of people? We're all about love and peace. All right, let's talk about, you know what? The Wachowski brothers created four of these, but they didn't go at this alone. Mm-hmm. I mean,
no,
obviously,
absolutely not.
Not even the four that they wrote. They didn't even create, they wrote them, but they even wrote some of them with help.
Yeah,
I mean,
but they didn't direct or anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. They got some of the best in the business to help them out. And so to talk about some of how these nine stories were created and some of the places they went. I'm going to throw it over to Max right here because you've got some information here.
I would say, okay, so when you watch the Animatrix, it's very clear that there's a very distinct style between each and every one of them. And almost to a weird degree, if you have watched a lot of like old school anime or like 90s anime, you can actually tell what studio they come from.
That is very, very true.
It's very,
if you
very
know
obvious.
This era of anime, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're still making shit. These studios still exist. Yeah. So most of them.
No, Studio 4C still exists. Madhouse still exists. TNA does not really, but I mean, Peter Chung
he's still not dead.
That was the Aeon Flux style, unique, creepy, distorted. I love that stuff. Yeah,
but this is all very like of the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. Studio 4C did Kid Story, which was the one where he's like running around and like falls off the building. And they did Tenkan King Crit. They're doing the new Berserk series, and they did Steam Boy. And you can tell from the Tenkan King Crit because that is the kind of distinct, weird, kind of like floaty style that they had.
Didn't they also? I don't know if it was 4C, Studio 4C yet when they made it, but wasn't it? They did Cowboy Bebop and. Or at least the person directing, Shinshiro Watanabe.
Yeah, yeah. She,
well, did Kabe and Samurai Champloo.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
nice.
Oh,
that explains it, because Champloo has like a weird, like.
It's rotoscoping.
Yeah, yeah, that it's animation style.
But he also did Kid Story and a Detective Story.
Right.
Yeah. So, which you can kind of tell.
Those two do read together. Yeah,
the Detective Noir Story, you can kind of see that it's like Cowboy Bebop, like Samurai Champloo esque. You can tell from their faces and kind of the way that their bodies are drawn. And obviously Madhouse is another one of them.
Yes.
And you can tell which one were the Madhouse ones.
Totally tell the Madhouse
ones.
Who has the longest faces.
Yeah. Like, who's got the longest eyes with like biggest lashes.
And has the most sweat pouring out their body.
The most hair ever.
Yeah, sure.
And so skinny. So skinny that I don't know how they don't break apart when they jump.
Their torsos are like, they're like 90% of their body.
They're like in real life, they'd be like 8 feet tall and they'd be like this like willowy thing.
Madhouse.
Awesome.
And then DNA, which is Aeon, Peter Chung, Aeon Flux. Mm-hmm. They did the matriculated one. So you could definitely tell that was Aeon Flux because Aeon Flux.
Yeah.
It's so distinct, I don't even think I have to explain.
Yeah, and for those of you watching who have never heard of Aeon Flux or seen Aeon Flux, go online, look it up.
It was one of MTV's, like, animated show.
It was part
from
of
Liquid Television.
Liquid Television.
And you'll remember from our Ninja Scroll episode, like, Liquid Television is also what introduced Americans to Ninja Scroll, because they splice it into their trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so guys, I mean, Liquid Television, Aeon Flux, has started a huge trend of anime, so it's good to know your anime history. Go look it up, Liquid Television, Aeon Flux.
Yes. And it was specifically, like, very grown-up anime, not, like, you know, like, childish, like, fart jokes
anime. It was, like, sexy and, like, really violent.
Yeah. It's very gory and mature.
It's crazy to think that they used to show that on, like, MTV.
Yeah.
I'm like,
But it was late at night.
Yeah,
it was like 11 o'clock. The rules are totally different for the NFC.
That was the first Adult Swim-esque / Toonami thing before that was a thing.
I'll be honest. I remember when I was a kid, I saw boob on regular television late at night. I saw boobs.
It's like a normal thing. Yeah. Like, cartoon boobs are just the thing. They're like, it's cartoons.
We saw boobies.
Yeah. Just the Elvira show on USA. There was like something up all night.
The Elvira show.
Yeah, what was it?
Dude, I mean, you definitely saw her breasts.
She got some big old boobs. Yeah.
They're in your face.
Everyone's
you guys today are missing out.
She looks great, by the way.
Yeah.
Still.
So you guys are missing out on some of the stuff we get to grow up with.
It was great to get away with that stuff.
Actually, Morgan Chen asks, is Aeon Flux an accessible anime for newcomers to the genre of anime?
It's not really an anime. It's more of an American cartoon. Peter Chung is actually a Korean-American director and animator.
He's from, like, Florida.
Highly influenced, though. Very much influenced by the anime style.
I feel like you can definitely find Aeon Flux online. A part of me wants to say, like, it was, like, on Blu-ray, and I feel like it was on Hulu at some point.
Yeah. I would say maybe it was... I think it is might still be on Hulu. I would say check those out.
I would check maybe Hulu, because I know Hulu has a lot of the MTV animated series. Like, I think they had the Max.
Max, classic.
Yeah, so.
And I have to just say this, that anime isn't a genre. It's a medium with which to tell stories. I feel like such a dick. Like, I'm always saying that, because people always say that shit about comics, too. Like, it's a comic stuff. Like, no, it's... a way to tell a story is all different. So Aeon Flux is like a really different... Like, Aeon Flux is nothing like Sailor Moon.
No.
It is adult, and it is gritty.
This is definitely before there was kind of this, like, merging of... Now, like, Avatar, where it's, like, half anime, half kind of, like, American cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's, like, these styles that kind of mix and match. Like, Aeon Flux is very much American.
Yeah.
And you're really going to get a great sense of the era of anime at that time, because Ninja Scroll and Akira and...
Vampire D Bloodlust.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And Aeon Flux really sort of, like, melded into that style and fit that bill.
Yeah.
That distorted, dark, you know, anime style.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
honestly...
great if you guys are into that shit.
Yeah. What was the name of the person who was asking about that?
Morgan Chan.
I would say check it out. I mean,
it's worth checking out.
Thank you, Morgan.
Especially if you're enthusiasts of like really weird styles and kind of like surreal animation, that's definitely
it's artistic,
a thing to go to.
Yeah.
But speaking of Vampire Hunter D, Yoshiaki
Kawajiri,
he was one of the directors. He directed Program and World Record, which I think are one of the two best ones. Yes, that's the ones that were animated by Madhouse. And the World Record was actually directed by Takeshi Koike.
Koike.
And he directed Redline, which if you've seen Redline,
which Jonathan's in.
Yes, I'm in Redline. Go see Redline; it's fantastic. We reviewed it, and it's so good.
If you watch,
if you watch Redline, you can definitely tell where the style is very much influenced from, because when he worked on the Animatrix, he had that style as well.
Yeah.
And then also, this is just for me. Mahiro Maeda is the director of Blue Sub 6 and Final Fantasy Unlimited and now Evangelion 3.1. He's one of the ones that directed the Renaissance 1 and 2.
Oh, nice.
Blue Sub 6 is literally one of my most favorite anime, like, hands down in the world. And it's beautiful, and the character designs were done by Range Murata, and it is definitely something to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andrew R. Jones, he's like probably one of the only American directors here.
He did Flight.
But he did Flight of the Osiris. But what he also did was he worked on Final Fantasy Spirits Within.
Oh, yeah.
Which would make a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense. That beginning sequence is, when I was watching the first one, I was like, God, it's so American. Because it was like, Asian girl getting her kimono cut off and doing like samurai battle in her underwear. I'm like, ugh. And then like as soon as it switches over to the real world, I was like, okay, let's watch the story now because it doesn't make any sense.
I love the first one, Final Flight of the Osiris, just because the way it ties into going into the second Matrix movie.
Once that part was over, it was really good.
Because it totally was like fan servicey.
That's the first thing, but like that. They use that for the promotions for Animatrix, like, over and over again.
People really
into that shit. They really love 3D. Like, 3D animation was, like, the thing that blowed people's minds.
And Spirits Within did not blow my mind.
It did not. But everyone was like, oh, that's really cool looking.
I was so excited
about it.
I know.
Yeah.
I was like,
we're
together.
If you think about it, it was, like, Final Fantasy, and all of us like, oh, shit. And he went to go watch it, and you're like, nothing
this is not Final Fantasy
about this. Like, upset.
I mean, there's a little bit of it. I don't know. I'm not gonna try and defend it when they will watch this movie.
But Final Flight was totally cool, and it really tied the first movie into the second movie and how we got there. And, there is one point that I think I did write down too. It was her fall when Joy is falling through that like maze of like pipework, and she does like some of the craziest contortions as she falls. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
And then she
it was totally superfluous, but it was awesome.
And then she flips in midair as she's falling, like free falling. And then, like, somehow rolls through perfectly
fine. She gets, like, traction on the air. I mean, it's the Matrix, so you just, like, kind of do whatever you want.
I'm really like, whatever.
So apparently when she puts the letter in that mailbox, that's the beginning of the Enter the Matrix game.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Drive Never
Lose. Which is actually a very good game. Oh, you play as Ghost.
I remember playing, but
you play as Ghost and Naomi?
Naomi. He plays Naomi.
Yeah, okay. So, but you mainly play as Ghost, and I always thought that was awesome because Ghost is super cool.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny, but like one of the other ones also ties into the later Matrix, the one with the kid.
Kid Story ties in.
Yeah, because I was explaining to Michelle because she had never seen it. And I was like, you know, he comes up in the movie and he's like super excited and it's like, let me help you, Neo. Let me be your like lapdog, Neo. And I was like, that's the kid from the Kid Story.
Yep. Yes, that is another tie-in. That's really cool. I noticed that as well. I always block it out because that kid who they cast was terrible.
He was so annoying.
Also, in the actual movie.
He was basically gun fodder. He was
bullied. Oh, yeah.
He was.
You saw me, you're so innocent.
I'm going to die.
You're the worst.
He was very like, remember me from the Animatrix?
No, movie tie-in.
They ruined that character because he's so much cooler in the Animatrix.
You know what show I really like that we haven't talked about yet is Beyond. It's the one with the girl and her looking for her cat.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt this real quick because... Just so you know, the one girl looking for a cat, Beyond, it's Michelle. It started, and I was like watching it again. I was like, it's Michelle.
Why is
like,
it me? Am I looking for cats constantly?
Well, no, she has your sister.
Yumi has three cats.
Yeah, but like the hair, it's like, it's angular.
Yes.
I mean, the character, the colors and the character designs of that one is literally the one that I love the most.
It's
like,
so good.
True. The animation style is very good,
too. It's so good. It's really cute. It's, and you know, the plot is kind of like, doesn't really, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't go anywhere. everywhere. It's just very pretty, and they play a lot with, like, splicing in, you know, just playing with gravity and, like, how characters move throughout. It, look, it almost looked like an art project. Like, some animation class was like, show a character moving, free-falling, and, like, do everything you can that's artistic. And they're like, okay, we made this.
I think that was also Studio 4C, which is why it kind of also looks like Tenkan.
I guess Koji Morimoto was an animator who worked on the film, was animator in Akira, and also Kiki's Delivery Service, City Hunter, Fist of the North Star.
It's the funniest thing. I did feel like a little Studio Ghibli in that, so that's so interesting.
It's like, it's very whimsy. There's a little
It's like a whimsical little girl. That's what it is.
It's more like, that one was the one that's more of like a glitch of like, hey, here's a little thing that happens in the real world to normal people, as opposed to being like, you know, the agents trying to attack you all the time.
Glitch in the Matrix,
And when it ends, you're like, huh? It's just fun. Okay, I get it. It was just nice.
All fun its own.
The voice acting was really great in all of this stuff, I think. I was really, as somebody who, sorry, John, doesn't really like dubs a lot, I was directed really, really well. I think I wrote it down, but I erased it. The woman who directed all the voice acting, she did a fantastic job. Apparently, this was back in the early 2000s, so there weren't like that many cool, like famous voice actors. So she was pulling from video game actors. I think it was like the whole cast of Final Fantasy X. Like, did stuff, but, good.
They nothing good. In the Animatrix from a voice acting standpoint, like jumped out at me. That was like, this is bad. Everything felt everything like really great and natural.
It didn't feel like to me, like, oh, this was in Japanese first, which is what the first thing I feel in anime when I see it.
Yeah, but I also think that that's because they directed this basically for, like, an American audience. They were able to actually, like, sync it together. So in a weird way, it's kind of, like, is one of the first, like, American-Japanese hybrid animes that have
untrue.
Has existed.
Vampire Hunter D was made for English.
I didn't know that. We gotta get to that movie on the show.
We will. It's like one of my favorites.
That's awesome.
Sunless. Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust was made for English. Then they dubbed it into Japanese. I've seen both. English ones better.
Have we not done this?
We have not done it yet. Wow. It is on my slate. I have had it slated forever.
This is gonna happen soon. We're gonna figure this one out.
Not next week though, but next week.
One thing I do want to ask is, as we're getting closer to the end here, is a favorite out of the nine. What was your favorite out of the nine? And I want to put this out there to all of you guys watching right now. Oh, how many we got watching?
Yeah.
I know, right? Whoever's watching right
now.
Just
like 10 people looking.
Yeah. Oh, go. So wait, of the Animatrix.
12 people.
Yeah, of the Animatrix, we want to know what your favorite story was. Of the nine stories, what's your favorite one? I guess Renaissance, Second Renaissance, you got to pick part one or two. You got to pick one. Yeah. So I think
so
I know
hard, dude.
I know. So you got to pick. So we want to hear it right into us right now, and we will say it, and we want to talk about it. What's your favorite of the nine? I have mine already, so I can say mine first.
Yeah, say yours.
Mine is Second Renaissance Part 2. I love Part 2 because of the conclusion of the story, the gore, the visualizations of
The robot, the skeleton robot on a horse with a beautiful... Holy shit!
The man that burns within the wheel of humans, like, basically us burning... our own, like, human timeline.
Yep.
Visually, it was stunning.
So good.
It was dark and intense. I was just... It's one of those that the whole time I feel uncomfortable and kind of cringy. Yeah. Like, it really got to, like, my core, and I really loved that one. So, I mean, granted, there's some really solid, amazing stories
so
in this.
So many solid ones.
But that's the one that just made me feel so uncomfortable that I kind of, like, stopped for a second afterwards and go, I need a deep breath.
Yeah.
So
I had to take a pause.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe pour myself a shot.
I already talked about mine. I really like Beyond because it was...
Right.
Just, well, because you're in it.
Because I'm in it. But, I mean, I love Renaissance 1 and 2. Like, it really got me thinking. It was... It's one of those things you watch and you're like, you have to, like, sit and think about your fucking life after it. Like, am I evil inherently? Or is humankind doomed to this? But it's good.
Yeah. I think, like, I'm one of those people split. Like, I am so biased to Madhouse style. I love the look of Madhouse, but... The Second Renaissance, that storyline, so good.
Yeah,
that writing, it was just so... And to this day, like, it still holds up.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah. That whole story, like, Renaissance 1 and 2, if you just made, like, your own little short about it, and you're like, damn, that is the thing. However, just because we've already discussed it, the one that visually stands out a little bit more, I think, besides the iconography, would have to be Program.
Yeah.
Which is basically...
The Madhouse one.
The Madhouse one. Just some of the compositions, the locations are amazing. The way that they, like, push the perspective, because it's like, the Matrix, and that's something that happens in the Matrix all the time.
Yeah.
It was very indicative of, like, you know, just what the Matrix is as kind of this, like, environment and what you can create it to be. Also, the designs are just super amazing. And also,
really beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I
love, yeah.
All the color just, and everything.
Yeah, the colors, the contrast, even the way that they shoot everything, it's so specific to Madhouse, like the way they pull in and like come out of everything. Yeah. Just like the really sweat, beautiful. The hair, the way it moves, it's so beautifully
when
animated.
They fight in that when they fight in the house and you see all the screen
the
doors
screen,
and they start opening
really
and
good,
it
yeah.
pushes the perspective out so it just looks like infinity doorways. Like I'm just like that's
so
quintessential
beautiful.
Matrix.
Art, bitch.
Yeah,
that's really good. Wait, you know what? That's the quote. I want to hashtag that. Hashtag that's art, bitch.
We have one response to what's your favorite story. Fresh Ingredient says a like detective story.
Oh,
Fresh
Ingredient.
It's also very good.
Yeah. I love the style and like
the
world
noir.
It was noir, but it was like supposed to be set in the 90s because Trinity's there, so that's a little weird.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, it was like the cool kind of like weird typewriter steampunk
technology. You know,
like, right. He's like on a computer, but it's a typewriter. Like that was fascinating.
Yeah. It kind of made me think that like was that guy's own personal matrix. Like his looks different because like he wanted something different. Or I mean, I guess everyone lives in the same matrix, right?
It right now,
like,
it is the same
one.
Matrix.
Yeah, it's the same matrix.
But in my head, I was like, maybe
that's more of just a stylistic
lives.
Thing, you know?
But it was totally unique, and it was only to that character. We never saw anything like that in the Matrix, any Matrix, anything.
When it started, I was like, oh, this is cool.
That noir style.
I do like that they played on that like 90s like. Hacker thing because it was such a big deal in the 90s, like elite speak and hacking. Mm-hmm. I was like, I used to be so into that.
So many hacking.
That's how you hack. You just go.
Now everyone just hacks.
Like crash and burn.
Now everyone just hacks Pokemon Go. Now Pokemon Go is getting hacked all the time. Who was it that said that? Who was it?
It was Fresh Ingredient.
Thank you, Fresh Ingredient.
Thanks, Fresh Ingredient.
Fresh Ingredient. You are fresh indeed.
Yes, indeed. If no one else is on this, I'm going to jump to our next part. Okay, then we're going to talk, we've got two more things to talk about before we end this thing. First is favorite moments of the Matrix. Any moment that that you just want to talk about, any moment that caught you, you want to talk about real quick.
Favorite moment, I mean.
I feel like we've already discussed it.
Yeah, really have.
Just rewind 5 minutes, we'll listen to it.
I do want to bring up, I thought it was really cool in Matriculated when the robot falls in love with a human.
Yeah.
Like, he's like in love with her, and that was really fascinating.
And she's like, fuck
this shit. I'm not just like commit digital suicide from that's what I got from it.
Did she die from being surprised? Like what happened? She was kind of alive.
I think she just kind of like decided to dissipate into the ether.
I think she was dying and then like you know was kind of in shock and finally her body gave out at that point because her mind
maybe that's what it was. I just translated it as kind of like a like she just got lost in her own program. Like they created this kind of like matrix for computers and then she just got lost in it.
Yeah. That was sad.
Wham, wham.
Yeah.
That was a good note to end on, by the way.
Yeah, I know, right? All right.
Matrix is rough, Desu.
All right. We are rating this bad boy. We want to hear your ratings as
Did we take out this rating system?
Did we do it? Did we do something different?
Well, John has been on the show.
I haven't been on the show in like weeks. What are
we
doing?
I think we have like a thumbs up system now.
We have thumbs up.
Like, bro, we bring it back.
Okay. Oh, I like that. That's very visual.
We're just
at a 12 o'clock position.
Okay. So this is like kind of like the.
Nothing was terrible. Nothing was nice. Nothing was
terrible.
Okay.
It was all super great.
So this is it. We could do it all at the count of three then, right? We got us on the main screen right here.
Yeah.
Okay, ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
That's four thumbs up.
That's four thumbs
up.
That's kind of fun. I like that. Let's have that. Of course, you guys are doing this for weeks.
It's very like Coliseum.
That's right. All right. That's our experience. Okay. So thumbs up, everyone. You should watch the Animatrix.
Yeah.
Whether you're a Matrix fan or not, it's great anime. It's really cool stories. You are getting like a history and style of so many different anime companies and so many different great artists and directors and writers.
So many styles. I mean, this is basically worth your money.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah, totally awesome. Animatrix is fantastic. I think that's kind of it. Unless you guys have anything else out there, I mean, we're about to do our wrap up. So this is our last chance right here. Anyone? Anyone?
No, they all did.
Yeah. You're done, son. Everyone.
Yeah.
My name is Jonathan Messa. You could find me at Kaiba Cat on all the social media things. Pass it to my left.
I'm Max Song. You can find me at Max Salt at literally the everythings.
And I'm Yuma Ninja. You can find me everywhere online at Yuma Ninja. And I should mention, next week we are doing Kenshin, the live-action movie.
The first one.
The first one. It is getting a limited U.S. release, thank you, Funimation, and it will be in limited screens from August 8th through 10th, so we will be covering it next Wednesday.
Yeah, that's right, son. Thanks, Funimation.
And I am Chubby Bunny Michelle. I remember my name this time. You can find me ever on the internet at I am Chubby Bunny, and also I write for geek.com now, so look at that stuff.
Suck it, Douglas. All right, everyone, thanks so much for having us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
See you next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.